because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Die, summary of this week in the Capitol. Same song, different verse, J.R. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. Why can't our Republican elected officials stay away from this wrenching emotional debate over abortion?
Oh, a couple things. One, there is very much a large anti-abortion wing in the Republican caucuses, both of them now. So they believe in the issue, the cause, if you will. And two, there's an opportunity here. The Planned Parenthood videos, whether you believe they are true or doctored or what,
right,
they've created a momentum, if you will, politically to do these things. I mean, Andre Jacques, who's one of the sponsors of the bill, Bill mentioned that he's done this at least twice before, I think.
Right. He's sponsored every time he's been reelected.
He didn't go anywhere. But yeah, now there's a momentum behind him because there's an outcry, if you will, especially from the base, for some kind of action in response to these videos. So this is the kind of vehicle for right now to do that. Now the question becomes, what's the bill going to look like? Because yep, UW officials have said, we've got concerns about research. Alberta Darling this week said something along the lines of, she wants to make sure that certain research is not impacted by this.
Which is key.
So the amendment is going to be key of how is it crafted, what's it look like, and what's it impact.
Okay, well, let's back up. We're talking here about Assembly Bill 305. It would make it a felony to sell or use fetal body parts after an induced abortion. As JR said, it's on a fast track to become law. Actually, that hearing on Tuesday, there was so much. Let's just stand out of the way. And first, let's hear the sponsor of the bill, Representative Andre Jacques, talk about why it's needed.
There has been a great deal of misleading rhetoric regarding this proposal. This legislation does not ban and certainly will not end tissue donation or research, nor does it ban fetal tissue donation. It does not prohibit any particular type of tissue from being experimented on, nor stop any particular method of experimentation, only that the source of tissue that is experimented on cannot come from an induced abortion, the intentional direct killing of an unborn child in the womb, as long defined in state statutes. Experiments identical to those being conducted with aborted children's tissues could be performed with cells which could have been derived through ethical means if such an attempt had been made. From a research standpoint, there are equivalent or better sources of fetal material found in amniotic fluid, umbilical cord blood, and placental tissue with no ethical concerns. Planned Parenthood's abortion services are promoted on the UW website. The UW even has two professors sitting on the board of the so-called Women's Medical Fund, which exists solely to provide loans or grants to women or girls as young as 11 to finance their abortions.
Jared, as we observed, the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, Dr. Robert Golden, the dean of that, was up there in front of some pretty hostile members of that assembly committee talking about how this would cripple medical research. So let's just listen to a few segments of a few comments by Dr. Golden.
This is not about the money. I wish we could conduct this research without NIH funding, but it's not about the money. It's about the science. It's about medicine. It's about preventing disease. It's about saving lives. Is there anyone in this room whose life has not been touched by a family member with Alzheimer's disease? It's all about making sure that our children don't have to take care of us with dementia the way many of us in this room are struggling to take care of our parents. That's what it's all about. It's not the money.
I guess my question is very simple. If we pass this bill as it is, would that stop the UW's ability to help fight and cure this disease?
It will immediately shut down much of the promising research on this campus. The research that is not directly affected will also be damaged because scientists aren't going to want to come here. The word is already out on the street that Wisconsin is not a place for science or for biomedical research. We need to turn that reputation around. But to answer your question, there will be an immediate disruption of all the promising research in cancer, Alzheimer's, and the other diseases that I mentioned.
The final clip I want to use, JR, it turns, there were a lot of some personal stories during this debate. First of all, you had Democratic Representative Fred Kessler opposing the bill, saying, I remember the polio scare of the 1940s, 1950s. Medical research like is conducted on this campus cured polio. But then you had very emotional statement from the committee chair, Representative Joel Klefisch, talking about his family's history with some of these crippling illnesses. So final clip, let's listen to Representative Fred Kessler and Representative Joel Clefish.
You couldn't leave your yard in about 1948 when I was 8 years old because of the polio epidemic. You couldn't crawl across the street and play with your friends because of the polio epidemic. If you got sick, as I did, I had appendicitis taken out when I was about 8 years old. They took me to Children's Hospital in Milwaukee, not because of the appendicitis. My parents were petrified that I might have had polio. I can remember that. And what scares me about this is a return to those type of days.
My father-in-law died of pancreatic cancer at age 52. Okay? He never met his grandkids. My father was just diagnosed 2 weeks ago with Alzheimer's. My mom has diabetes. My wife is alive today by some of the work of Frederick in the Medical College. She was diagnosed with cancer at age 35. So I'm pretty sure there are pretty few people in this room who know that illness and serious illness is a son of a bitch more than I do. But I can tell you, sitting here today, having gone through what I've gone through with my family and speaking to those members about this very bill and about this very subject, I know that when it comes to a potential cure for myself, and my wife can speak for herself, we don't want it at the cost of killing a child.
JR, here's what I'm curious about. When Governor Walker was asked at a state fair press conference about this bill, AB 305, he was vaguely noncommittal, and that's a stance that we've heard on other issues that later turn out to be law. Won't he, in the middle of a presidential campaign, have to sign a bill like this?
I would assume so. What was interesting was, after the hearing that evening, his office put out a statement that seemed to suggest that he was fully behind the effort, if you will. But what Walker has often done in the past is said, well, I'll wait to get to my desk, or that bill's not there yet. One exception has been actually an abortion as well, a 20-week abortion ban. If you remember back in the spring, he said, I will sign the bill once it reaches my desk. It's the one time I've seen him, I can remember seeing him authoritatively saying, I want it on my desk, get this done kind of thing. So it's kind of more the Walker style of, I'm not going to commit to anything until I see the final details, but I would assume once this bill is done, he would sign it. Now, and the question goes back to, what's the amendment look like? Are there exemptions? Are there tweaks? And what does it do to get through both caucuses? And is he happy with that version of the bill once it comes to him?
But when Dr. Golden says this could cancel about one-fourth of the $286 million in research we got last year, does the governor want to be seen as not only cutting the overall UW system budget plus hurting medical research? Or, if you're just appealing to your conservative base, yes, he'll sign it.
Well, this cuts across into the more the social issue aspect of, there are folks in the legislature that don't care about the money coming in. They feel like that research is immoral, and they don't want it done. So, but what gets back to, UW-Madison was the ground zero, if you will, of stem cell research.
What, Jamie Thompson?
17 years ago now.
Yeah.
It was once celebrated, but you've seen these fights before on cloning bills, other things we've talked about. This could limit our research. There's been that rub for some time now, and you're seeing it's because of the rise, if you will, of social conservatives a little bit in the legislature.
Clefish visited with Capitol reporters on the day after the hearing on Wednesday. He made it clear that this is on the fast track for the fall session, at least in the Assembly. And do you think Darling's comments will slow it in the Senate?
It just depends, because she didn't really give a firm commitment of what that amendment might look like. Now, during the hearing, even the authors said they're going to talk about an amendment that would make sure certain research can be done still, lines before 2010, something like that.
Yes.
So they're already talking about changes to kind of address these concerns. But again, there wasn't a firm commitment from Alberta about what she wanted done to the bill. So we have to wait and see.
The issue hasn't gelled in the Senate, much further along in the Assembly. Okay, new topic. It's the biggest potential change in Wisconsin higher education since the UW system was stitched together in 1971. Now we have a group of Assembly Republicans beginning to look at the question, should we merge the 16 technical colleges and the 13 two-year colleges? They have to meet in secret. They say, the head of that study group, Representative Terry Katsma, I want to take back what I said. They don't have to meet in secret. They are meeting in secret. Why can they meet in secret, Chair?
Well, there are a couple of things. One, they can consider this a caucus. Caucuses are exempt from the open meetings law. And two, if you really want to go back and look at the Supreme Court decision from the Act 10 lawsuit a few years ago, they basically said the legislature is free to to do what it wants. It can violate the open records law all at once because it sets its own policy, if you will. That's kind of a plain English explanation, if you will, but eventually it's up to them. So they are saying this is a caucus, we are meeting to study ideas, this isn't a true committee, and it's one of several that are out there that are working on right now in terms of ideas, if you will.
Right.
Now, we're a long way from this being a done deal of a merger.
Yeah.
Because there are all kinds of complicating factors. There are jobs. Mm-hmm. These are economic drivers from these communities, especially small communities in Wisconsin that have a two-year campus or a tech college or both.
Yep.
So if you're talking about a good-paying job in a small town, it's kind of tough to let go. So there's all kinds of political implications, if you will, for the discussion of a merger or consolidation.
Yeah, but the backdrop issue is the future cuts in state aid mm-hmm. to these systems. I mean, it so intrigues me. I looked it up. State aid this year will make up 37% of the tech college spending. 2 years ago, it was 6.7%. And state aid, 17% of all UW system spending. 10 years ago, not two, it was 27%.
Remember, the tech colleges, though, part of what they're doing is buying off the property tax levy. So they pump all that money in to drive down property taxes, and now they're stuck with that bill, if you will, going forward of how do we keep them off, you know, keep the reliance on property taxes low. So that's an issue going forward. You've heard all kinds of proposals from folks like John Nygren, for example, talking about possibly raising the sales tax to lower property tax rolls for tech college. Now, that's an idea that's been discussed, never gotten any traction, if you will, in the legislature, but there is this question of how do we fund tech college education in Wisconsin, and can we do it in a way that's less burdensome on a homeowner? So.
Yeah, the UW Chancellor for Colleges and Extension, Kathy Sandeen, says in other states like Iowa, they have community colleges performing some of these basic academic and voc tech functions. And you're absolutely right. In Janesville and in Wausau, you have separate tech college campuses and UW college campuses, sometimes even in the same neighborhood.
Yes.
So there is some potential savings, do you think?
I don't know the issue well enough to know what the savings could be, but you would think there'd be duplication they could eliminate. But what's duplication to you is a good paying job to somebody else, and that kind of comes a rub. I'm sure if it's in your district, you're going to fight hard against any merger because of what it can impact the people that vote for you.
Yeah, and you and I are aware when Assembly Speaker Voss wants something studied, he names a task force.
Mm-hmm.
And he named, I think, three of them in the past month.
Yes.
He has no task force named on this issue. Do you expect it? Question one. Question two, I don't detect anybody from the Senate working as part of this study group.
I've not seen that yet. And even the people who are involved with the study group have said we're a long way away from proposing a merger. We're just kind of in the discussion stages right now of where things are going. So this has been a discussion going on for a long time and will go on possibly for a long time more about what to do with these places.
But isn't it intriguing that this an issue of this importance, there's no public debate on it yet?
Well, you know, it goes back to this idea of when can you get together and just talk and share ideas and when you have to be in the public doing it. I mean, if two lawmakers are in a room or go to a bar and have a drink and talking about, you know, an idea, is that okay? I mean, how is that different? I mean, it's in the capital or social setting,
right?
Those kinds of things. But at some point, can you have a discussion, a brainstorming session, if you will, outside the public view?
And meanwhile, Speaker Voss gets a letter from professors saying, hey, could we have a seat at this discussion table, even if it's secret? Very intriguing. Okay, so at the state fair, the governor signs the Bucks Arena bill, $250 million in public support. Mm-hmm. Was there some conservative criticism?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, talk about that.
Well, even before the bill signed, Americans for Prosperity, for example, they made clear they're not happy about the arrangement because using public dollars for a private business, if you will. The Koch brothers, their kind of, you know, organization, they weren't real thrilled with the idea. You've seen some national conservative media taking shots at Governor Walker for signing, along with liberal media as well. But it's kind of a no-win situation for Walker in some ways of, okay, do you want the Bucks to leave on your watch, which
right.
would be embarrassing.
No, he doesn't.
Or take the hits for signing a bill that authorizes tax dollars to go to help out a sports arena. Now, we are not the only state in the country to have a public financing piece of a sports arena, let's be honest. But it's still not something people are thrilled about. I'm still somewhat surprised by the vote in both houses, how bipartisan it was, and some people from out of state who voted for it.
52 in the Assembly, 21 in the Senate. Go ahead, excuse me.
If you look at the polls, people aren't real thrilled about it. The idea of their tax dollars going to help this arena. Oh, by the way, these two new owners of the Bucks are now in Wisconsin entrenched, are big-time Democratic donors. Will they be a new source of money for Democratic candidates? Will they also vote donate to Republicans to be good corporate citizens, if you will,
yep.
the political process? There's all kinds of political stuff from that going on as well. But it's just a fascinating thing to see, like this debate for Walker of How do you get this thing done and off your table as quickly as possible to move on? Because well, so he celebrated a little bit,
yeah.
But he's not like doing a big victory lap around the state, you know, fly around and talk, hey, we signed a Bucks deal, you know, kind of things.
Do you think at a future debate, the governor will clearly be up on the stage? Do you think one of the other 16 Republican candidates for president will jab him on the issue of helping billionaires who own the Bucks?
The only one who's really gone after him so far has been Donald Trump. It's more been about, you know, your state's a mess. It's a mess, the Donald's words. So I don't know if this becomes a driving issue, and I'm not sure how big of a mover, as you will, in that primary, but I think there are other things you'd go after Scott Walker on other than this. First, the jobs pledge.
Yep.
You know, the economy hasn't been as good as it could be in some people's minds. Job growth, what, 33rd, 34th, 34th, whatever number you want to use. So those might be more potent hits, if you will. But, yeah there's certainly the base isn't really happy about this.
Meanwhile, the City Council of Milwaukee, they've mm-hmm. scheduled meetings on this. And they're
22nd, I think.
Yeah, they're going to vote very soon on the deal. And it's going to, because the Milwaukee County Board of Supervisors doesn't have to vote, that's a done deal.
Yes.
Walker said, of course, every dollar in public investment is going to return three. Mm-hmm. That's his sales pitch.
Cheaper to keep them.
Cheaper to keep them. Bucks hope to break ground in October for this. Okay. But it was also intriguing. Just one more point. Senator Steve Noss was the only one who said, excuse me, if you look at the Building Commission agenda, $10 million to improve the Bradley Center. And yes. That was a proven, the vote on that was unanimous. Yeah. So that's one more.
And as
bit.
I understand it, you know, there are safety concerns with the building as is. It shows you, again, in some people's minds that the place is kind of falling apart. And two, if I understand this correctly, the way they're configuring this building, mm-hmm. like the construction site and stuff, it's going to, you know, cut off some access, if you will, to Bradley Center, the way it's kind of set up. So they have to move some things around, like a loading dock or something like that.
Right.
But one thing that Jerry Petrosky said during that committee hearing, he's one of the members of the Building Commission, was this is the last public money, right? Like, this is it kind
right.
of thing.
Right.
So there is definitely they're not really happy about it, but they did vote for it.
And then the Noss press release said, here's something that didn't come up during the debate on the Bucks arena.
Yes.
Drip, drip, drip. More state support for the whole area around the arena. Okay, new topic. The polls after the GOP debate have not been kind to Scott Walker. Let's just look at two of them. CNN ORC, as you're well aware, Trump 27%, Ben Carson 14%, Scott Walker 9%. And then the Suffolk University poll of likely Iowa caucus goers, Trump 17%, Governor Walker 12%, and then Carson and Senator Marco Rubio 9%. A major sign that the governor didn't do very well?
Well, there could be a couple things at play. And remember, first off, let's remember this is now August of the off year. We're still a few months away. One thing we fail in politics to do often is take the long-term view, if you will.
Yeah.
So the Trump boomlet continues. It's kind of funny because you read the national media, they are all waiting for Trump to fail. It's like, when's he going to fall apart?
It hasn't happened
yet. Yeah. So he's been a good run for almost a month now. So he seems to be settled into his spot. So, okay, so he's there. But what's he look like in January? If I were Scott Walker, I'd be worried more about the January polls than the August ones. If this trend continues, that's a problem for Scott Walker. Two, the debate wasn't the best for him. He didn't do as well as he probably could have. He wasn't very aggressive at times. So these people who did do better, like Carly Fiorina, for example, she won the junior varsity debate, whatever you want to call it. She's seen her numbers rise a little bit. Marco Rubio got good numbers out of that debate. So there's like these ebbs and flows, if you will, to the field right now. But there's also the question of your long-term strength. Carly Fiorina doesn't have money or infrastructure like Scott Walker does. So Scott Walker may have taken a short-term hit in this poll, but you look at the campaign he's building, he's announced backers in, was it South Carolina this week or Georgia, one of the two?
And Minnesota.
He's committee state chairs. He's building this infrastructure that will help him kind of take these ebbs and flows, if you will, better than somebody else might. Now, long term, you're starting to see more criticism of Scott Walker in conservative media of, is he ready for the prime time? Can he break beyond the usual stump speech and kind of get out there and prove he's ready for this position? If he can't shake that perception, that's also an issue for him. But right now, I'd kind of, if I were him, I'd just take a deep breath and go, okay, I've got a few months. But if it's December and it's the same and things are settling in,
right,
then he has to shake things up. You think at that point something has to be done to move.
But he was the one in the middle of the debate who said, time out. We should be focusing on Hillary Clinton. And he had generally not been critical of Trump, but then in the wake of the polls, he kind of had to say, okay, you watch Donald Trump and what he says, it's kind of like it's like watching a car accident.
And what did you
say? Major reversal, something else. Yeah.
He said, I wouldn't use the words that person in the center of the state. He didn't even say Donald Trump's by name. He said, I wouldn't use the language of that person in the center of the stage the other night. You know, so he's kind of taking on the Donald, if you will, without really kind of engaging in terms of a name-calling contest.
Yeah.
Because if you look at it, if you get into a one-on-one fight with Donald Trump, who's going to win? I mean, he is the guy who'll blow the hardest, if you will, in any kind of an argument. So why really engage him in trying and create an opportunity for him to kind of keep going at you in some ways?
The Teflon Donald Trump, I mean, he insults Senator John McCain. Yes. He gets into it with Megyn Kelly.
Oh, yes.
And his poll,
gets disinvited from a conservative forum to address activists. You know, it's kind of odd. I've talked to people about this. It seems like he's tapped into some kind of like vein in the Republican base where they don't want somebody who's a politician. That might be it. He's the anti-politician. He's also politically incorrect, which may tap into a certain vein with some folks as well. He's a businessman. So maybe those things kind of got him a little bit of a base. Now, the question is, where's his ceiling? Let's say he's at 25%, 27%. That's real.
Yeah.
You can't win with 25% at some point. At some point, you have to break higher than that to win these primaries and caucuses. So if he can't expand the base, he's got a problem. And oh, by the way, look at the general election questions they ask these polls. He may be winning the primary question in those polls, but against Hillary Clinton, he fares the worst of any of them, which is an interesting dynamic for him a little bit.
Right. Well, it's interesting. Okay, but let's talk about Scott Walker's response to the dip in the polls. A little bit of the little engine that could, a little bit of the tortoise and the hare. I ran track in high school. A lot of people that ran out ahead, usually those were the guys I passed when I came around the last corner. Boy, that goes back to his Delavan days flipping burgers, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But now, but his organization has said we're going to drop 7 million in Iowa, right?
The Super PAC, yeah.
Super PAC. And the caucuses are February 1. Also, underscoring the importance of Iowa, where's he going to be on Monday, JR?
Des Moines Register Soapbox at State Fair.
Yes.
So it's a tradition the Register has where people show up and give their spiel. It's very important. I think it started a couple of days ago.
Yeah, it did.
If I remember right. So
Huckabee's been there. Martin O'Malley's been there.
He's going to be in Iowa. He's going to be in New Hampshire. I was interesting thing this week. Campaign announced several stops in New Hampshire for an aggressive play for that state. One place where he was pulling his road to a tank was in New Hampshire. He would drop down to not even the top tier, if you will, in one poll. Now, these are individual polls. You see like kind of a some over time to see a trend, but that's a place he's not expected to do well because it is a place where it's an open primary, so Democrats and independents can vote in that primary. Other folks like Christie have staked their plans or future, if you will, on the more moderate New Hampshire.
Is this the same New Hampshire where Bernie Sanders leads Hillary Clinton, my friend?
Yes.
So, how intriguing.
Interesting. So Walker's, you know, ideally his goal is, if not win Iowa, place or show, survive New Hampshire, and then use South Carolina as your firewall. That's the one where he goes in and he needs to do well, springboard forward, if you will.
Okay.
Go on.
Fascinating. Okay. There's no WisPolitik stock report, but let's take note of a major fundraiser next Tuesday by our Lieutenant Governor, Rebecca Clayfish. Mm-hmm. Now, here's me. This is a sign of her beginning to tee up her campaign for governor in 2018. Is that a fair read?
Well, here's the other thing. What if she's governor in 2017?
Okay, because Walker's elected president or he gets a federal appointment.
Yes. So separates out into a couple different things. Number one, there's the Walker effect. I've asked numerous people on both sides of the aisle this question for a year now. I can't find anybody who thinks Scott Walker run for election in 2018. All right?
I agree with you.
So whether he wins the nomination, becomes president, goes in the cabinet, whatever, he's not going to run for election in 2018.
He's exhausted his capital in Wisconsin.
Beyond that, I mean, if you think about it, once you're on the national stage and have that kind of experience, can you imagine the budget process in 2017, how engaged he would be about, oh, another budget, Medicaid again, that kind of thing. So there's that. Then there's the, okay, when would he leave? There is a theory that, okay, he either wins the nomination, becomes president, leaves then. Republican wins, makes him a cabinet, he'd be, you know, a great cabinet appointment, if you will, for somebody else. Could he be vice presidential material? There's all those scenarios.
Okay.
There's also a persistent rumor of, well, he's going to leave no matter what. Now, I've asked people about this. There are people who are adamant in the Capitol who believe that Scott Walker will not fill out this term no matter what. Yes, other folks will tell you it makes no sense to leave midterm because you've become Sarah Palin light, if you will, or Palin-esque, because she ran for, you know, on the vice presidential, the ticket, didn't win, resigned, hey, it's great for being on Fox News, but if you want to have a future in politics, is she running for president this year? No. It didn't really help her cause, if you will. So there's that Walker impact. Now, go back to Clayfish. She's not just been building toward 18. She's actually the best fundraiser I've seen as lieutenant governor maybe ever in Wisconsin. Now, I haven't got Scott McCallum's numbers off the top of my head, but I've compared her to Barbara Lawton. There's no comparison.
No, there's no comparison.
So Clayfish, a couple things going for her. One, she was part of the recall process so well, it gave her a number of donors to tap into because it kind of gave her the same experience. Two, I went back and looked at her campaign finance reports from 14. People who maxed out to Scott Walker would turn around then go into Rebecca Clayfish because it's $10,000 for per person to a candidate.
Yep.
You can do $10,000 to her, the money can be, you know, mingled together, if you will, the cause.
But, okay,
so there's that.
But I want to add one point. Lieutenant governors can only do things that the governors allow them to.
Yes.
So the fact that she scheduled a major fundraiser in Madison next Tuesday means the governors didn't say, don't do that.
Well, the governors also included her much more than either Barb Lawton was by Jim Doyle or Scott McCallum was by Tommy Thompson. Now, that's not a high bar to cross, according to some people, but she's been involved. I think she's doing a job creation announcement today in southeastern Wisconsin. She's been high profile, the tax roundtable discussion.
The tax tour with Secretary Chandler, even though no major recommendations came out of that.
But she's been touring the state. She's been doing a lot of stuff for the WEDIC. She is definitely more of a high profile, if you will, Republican candidate. Now, 2018, your first question, we'll finally get to that one. What's fascinating is, if she's Governor Clayfish come 2018, most people talk, don't expect there to be a primary of her because she's the incumbent, you know, even though she didn't win the seat. She was kind of, you know, ascended to
Ribble
it.
Passes, Duffy passes.
Those are names I've heard thrown out there before that they would say, okay, I can't really challenge a primary sitting governor. If it's an open seat, whole different story. Duffy's name I hear more than anybody else in terms of the congressional delegation. Clayfish is obviously going to run for governor in 18. If,
right.
You know, barring the surprise of century, Scott Walker runs again, she will run. Who else might come out of the woodwork? You know, if something the legislature, for example, might run. Something the private sector might run. It could be a wide open race, but she has things going for her. One of them being Charlie Sykes. She had a big fan in talk radio in 2010 when she ran for the nomination the first time. They really helped push her across
after
the line.
After finishing third in the vote in the state GOP election.
In the endorsement process.
In the endorsement
state
process.
Convention. I think she was third or fourth. But anyway,
okay, but she was way out of the money.
She was one of the first people out of the race. So she wasn't even a factor in that race, the nomination or the endorsement vote. But then Charlie Sykes got behind her and really pushed her across the finish line. Did really well in southeastern Wisconsin. If those guys are behind her again in the governor's race, you know, that would be something. Plus, it'd be historic, first female governor. That's a story to tell.
Isn't it also telling that the sponsors or the featured attractions at this fundraiser Tuesday in Madison are Assembly Speaker Voss and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, which implies, you know, we're certainly not thinking about running for governor. We like Rebecca. That's a takeaway message from this thing, isn't
Fitzgerald, it? Fitzgerald, the rumor of Fitzgerald's been for years, he's got his eye on Sensenbrenner's congressional seat. So once Congressman Sensenbrenner leaves, that Fitz will run for that seat. So there's that. Voss really hasn't made any moves that he wants to be governor, if you will. So, but yeah, I mean, you keep up good relations with the people in the party. So it's just good politics, if you will. Keep your options open, but don't burn any bridges with anybody unless you have to.
And she's aiming very high financially with this. Here, look, $12,000 for a sponsor. That'd get you, I think, four seats. Mm-hmm. $5,000 for a host, $1,000 per person. I talked to a high Republican appointee yesterday who I said, are you going to Rebecca's fundraiser? She looked at me and she said, it is too expensive. Really is. So you think people will pay write these big checks for there?
It's a good question. If you look at her campaign finance report, she's done well. This last one I looked at wasn't as impressive as the previous ones had been. Maybe it's kind of a deep breath, if you will. But if she's building up toward the possibilities that are before her, it makes sense to get going now. And if you're a Republican donor and you look at the reality of the position she's in, it's marking the ground floor a little bit just in case what comes up.
That's great. Okay. That's Rewind for this week. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.